Guru Nation, welcome to episode 862 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, it's a fraud pod discussion with Darshan Kulkarni, world-renowned attorney and pharmacist. We go through the DCT guidances from the FDA. There's a lot of good stuff in here. At the end of the day, it just gives sites kind of some documentation from the regulatory agency as to how to operate. And there's a lot that actually comes up. And there was two guidances, which Darshan says one of them is not talked about enough. So we get into it as well. Really quick, shout out to the sponsors. Thank you to Inato. Inato is an amazing place where you can get studies for your site for free. I have probably my last five studies have come from Inato. It's a really good platform, very good user experience. They have a really good team there. You pay nothing. It's absolutely free. The sponsors pay the Inato. You don't even deal with it's as if you're not using Inato when you get a site selection visit, and it's just a normal study, but it's free. You do need experience, but I would suggest anyone with research experience to get on it and see what studies you can get. And also, thank you to Creo. Creo is an amazing platform as well. I could not manage my site without it. It's got an e-source, e-reg, CTMS, patient database, auto texting, e-signatures, so much more good stuff on there. Only pay for what you use. Check out Creo. Thank you very much. Enjoy the episode.
Ah,
We're
there we go.
live. Guru
Alive.
Nation, Fraud Pod Nation, welcome to another episode of Fraud Pod. Back by popular demand with the one and only. We have this contract we go through. But we have so much to get into, right? We've been dissecting like section by section of this contract from a sponsor. But last time we did that, we couldn't get into like the things we wanted because Darshan could spend an hour on a paragraph. So, by the way, he charges by the hour. So, those two things go hand in hand.
But it's all free for you so far, isn't it?
Oh, jeez,
Well, this is
yes, it's
all
been
free advice
free.
for everyone who's listening for educational reasons.
Not legal or medical advice,
Exactly.
but educational and to do your own homework, just to like pique your interests. Yeah, kind of a wild day today. Well, yesterday, this guidance came out.
Actually, here's the funny part. Two guidances came out. Everyone's missed the second guidance, which I quite honestly haven't even read yet, but I think it's super important
We're
by
going to get
itself.
into a little bit of that because I
Yeah.
know you read. The only thing I read about it was Brad Hightower's post about, I guess we can go to patients' homes. And I was like, well, maybe sites have already been doing that, here and there. Just
Yeah. They
what's
should
the big
call
deal?
this DCT guidance should just be called in love of telehealth or stuff you probably don't know, and quite bluntly, the FDA either doesn't want to tell you about.
So I'm wondering how many new startups, just get funding based off of this guidance. And at the end of the day, nothing really will change. I mean, like sites have been calling patients and doing remote visits. Sites have been, even before telehealth was a thing, sites have been going to patients' homes. Darshan, I remember one of my first studies I ever worked on. It got me introduced to research. It was 2003. I was a summer intern for the clinic, psychiatric study, observational study, where my dad and a few other doctors, were running. I mean, they just had a busy private practice, and they were like, here's a research study, have fun this summer. And it was essentially just like a diary study.
Yeah.
And I would go to these patients lived in assisted living facilities. Like, there's no way they were coming to me. So
Yeah.
I would go to them. Was I doing DCT in 2003?
You were. You
Okay,
absolutely
so
were.
what's like groundbreaking about this?
So, like I said, I think the key here is two things. Number one, legitimizing pharmacies, because people are wondering whether that's going to happen.
Pharmacy. How
And
do you get only a pharmacist can get pharmacy out of this?
well,
What?
first of all, they actually specifically call it pharmacies in the guidance.
Ah, okay.
And so as part of the DCT thing, they say local healthcare practitioners, including pharmacies. So
Man, your phone's gonna be blowing up after this.
We're going to keep talking. My phone's going to blow up for this other reason, which the FDA calls out. But I can tell you right now, the vast majority of small clinical trial sites do not know how to comply.
We're going to get into this, but
yeah,
just answer me this, please.
Yeah.
Because this seems to happen a lot in our industry.
Yeah.
And this makes news events.
Yeah.
Not newsworthy for me and a bunch of other site owners that, you know, we're sitting around like, okay, that's guidance. Wow. Like, I've been doing this since 02.
Yeah.
What is like so special about this?
Well, I think a couple of different things that's really special. Some of it makes things a little bit easier for smaller sites, which is, for example, I think the delegation of authority laws just became a lot easier because of this guidance. Because they say, well, they specifically come out and say, here are the people we want on your 1572. Here's what actually qualifies as a sub-investigator. And here are the types of people who need to be on the 1572 or the delegation of authority logs, which I think is important because do you train every single person or do you not? What is who needs to be on there? I think that's really important because you see a lot of findings based on delegation of authority and being on the 1572.
Fair enough. So what did they say?
Well, they basically said that if the trial is involved, and you need to be like, there's special training involved. It's not just part of your regular clinical course of practice. You need to be on the 1572 and or the delegation of authority. But if it's just, for example, a nurse drawing blood, well, she does that every single day in her clinical practice anyways. She may not need to be part of it.
Right.
So that, I think, changes a lot of sort of what goes on there and what doesn't, and should hopefully help sites limit. Now, it's going to cause some complexity.
So it draws a line in the sand because we already do this. We don't put our phlebotomist on the...
You may not, but now you know that you can get away with it.
I see.
So if the FDA calls you out, you can go, this was a determination we made and we actually have it in our policies.
I see.
So let's be honest, Dan. A lot of things you do are sort of your best judgment on how to handle it. Then the law catches up with you in like 5 years. So
yeah, that's how these things work. Yeah,
exactly. So what we're getting is the law saying, yeah, Dan, you were right, but you didn't have the law backing you that second when you were doing it. And I think that's part of the advantage, right? I think what you're also seeing is what most people don't realize. This is we're now going to tie this talk into the Janet Jackson nipple case. You remember that Janet from the Super Bowl?
Of course.
Yeah, this went all the way to the Supreme Court. It was Fox v. FCC, Supreme Court case. And in it, the court basically was charged with trying to understand, well, was it a problem that Janet Jackson's nipple showed up during the Super Bowl? And the court said, was it not allowed? Did you have a rule saying that you can't do that? No, we didn't have that explicit rule, but they should have known, or they should have known better. And the court said, if you don't explicitly say no, it's a yes. In the same specific way, if they don't explicitly say no, it's a yes. You didn't say that you can't have people go out and take care of patients. Well, then it's a yes. Now, should these people have been on the 1572 or in the delegation of authority? Well, they technically had anyone who was involved in the clinical research needs to be on the delegation of authority log or in the 1572, depending on what it is. But they didn't really mean it. And that's the problem. We now have explicit direction about what they actually meant.
Okay, fair enough. I guess having the guidance on paper, because this is still guidance at the end of the day, right?
It is. Dropped. Correct.
Okay. And you were saying something else. Now you were saying something interesting about... So, first of all, I thought guidance already dropped about being able to do home visits.
They did. There are multiple guidances, and they usually build on each other.
Okay, so they repeat. They can repeat themselves
all the time.
Previous. Okay, all right. So even less noteworthy. But what about you were saying doctors are gonna love this?
So two different parts. So before we get to the doctors part, the other thing. Oh, actually, let's address the doctors part first. Doctors are gonna love this because this is now the FDA basically, without using these words, went, you know what? You guys need to pay other doctors, not even involved in clinical research, a bunch of money. And you'd go, how the hell did they say that? Because they said that you can have people who are not directly involved in your clinical research who are doing these other things, for example, in the clinical practice. And it's not just the doctors, it's anyone else, right? They're doing all this adjacent stuff. You can have them involved. Well, if you're going to have them involved, do you think they're just not going to want to get paid?
Wait, what do you mean they can get involved? So like do a physical or...
So if the physical is part of their normal practice, for example, right?
Right. Not the PI.
We're not talking about the PI.
Okay.
If it's part of the diagnosis or part of the actual study protocol, that was already like you need to pay them. Now we're saying there's some people who don't have to be on that 1572, don't have to be on the delegation of authority log, right? We just said that. If that's true, there are people who are doing work who are not on that 1572 or in that delegation of authority log, which don't need to be specifically trained, right? If that's true, they still need to get paid. They aren't going to just do stuff for you for free.
They don't.
I mean, you can try to pull that off, but you're a businessman. You're not doing anything for free, are you?
I'm not. No.
Exactly right. But you're expecting the doctors to?
I don't think I've ever had a doctor do something for free other than refer a patient for a study.
Yeah, but now.
Does this change that?
That they make referrals? Well, there's another thing.
Like a pre-screening. This is where it gets crazy.
Well, so it doesn't explicitly say you have to pay the doctor. So it doesn't come out and say you need to pay the doctor.
Right.
My thought process is very clearly, you're saying that the doctor can do X, Y, Z, even if they're not part of the study. In that case, why should the doctor do A, B, C while they're not part of the study? The only reason is because they're going to get paid.
So like, a practical example would be, hey, doc, you know, my PI and I are running this study for, let's say, psoriasis.
Yeah.
We know you have a lot of patients here in your practice.
Yeah.
Here's a pre-screening checklist. We will pay you for everyone you submit.
Well, what we'd have to explore whether that's allowed, or is that considered to be part of the trial? You may be 100% correct. I don't know explicitly what that might be.
That would and would not be part of the trial, because not everyone gets someone that doesn't qualify.
Yeah, and we'd have to explore that individually, and that's when you come find me again.
1-800 call Darshan.
And that is not the number, but...
I wonder who
1-800 Darshan, like, no, that's not my number.
Yeah, that's not Darshan's number. Just message him on LinkedIn. That's a lot easier.
Yeah, or just call me at 302-252-6959. But
okay,
there you go. But I think that it legitimizes a lot of efforts that, for example, you might now have CRAs who are not trained in the study, but are medical assistants who are not trained in the study, who can now do other study-related but not study-specific things.
We had a patient recently who had an AE. They weren't feeling well.
Yeah.
We don't know if it was related to the study drug or not. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
In the clinic, the PI said, hey, he called one of his MAs.
Yeah.
Give her an IV. You know, she needs IV fluid. It's hot here in Arizona, so she was dehydrated.
Yeah,
and none of our research staff have done IVs. You know, we're all coordinators, so their MA did it, and the MA, basically did it as a favor for her boss. And so this would be a perfect example.
This could potentially be exactly the type of thing the FDA is talking about. Now, should the MA get paid for that? Should the sponsor pay the MA for going and taking care of this adverse event?
And I've asked their PI that when their AMAs do favors, I said, hey, you want me to pay them? And he said, no, they're on the clock for me already.
That's nice of him, but now he can explicitly say that we're going to build a sponsor, the CRO, for this.
Okay. And so he has the guidance to back him up.
Exactly right.
So if the FDA doctors are like happy about this. This has been going on for decades.
It has been going on, but now you explicitly have allowance for it, which we did not have before.
Sure. But
I'm a big fan of every sponsor goes, and I do this because I also negotiate for sponsors, but sponsors generally go, look, this is part of the practice of doing medicine, or this is part of the clinical research process. We're not paying you extra for that. Well, the FDA is explicitly saying it is outside the clinical research process.
Chris Sauber, are you listening? You can get more money now. I think Chris is listening. By the way, Chris has a new newsletter.
That's right. I signed up for that thing. I think I was subscriber number 45 because I was like 3 minutes late.
It's riveting stuff. Chris in the voice of random characters from famous movies. So last week was Forrest Gump. We'll see what we get next week.
I didn't see that. Yeah. That's actually a really good hook, though, isn't it?
You think it's good? I you know, he kind of joked around with me about that, and I told him he should just do it.
Oh, I signed up as soon as I heard.
Yeah, if you don't have a brand, like, you have a lot of... If you don't have an established brand, you have a lot of creativity at your disposal.
Right.
That,
right.
You know, incumbents are not afforded generally. Although, I don't care. But I don't need another newsletter. I don't need another newsletter. Okay, so back to the doctors. So there was another thing you said.
Yeah, there are a couple other things. So there are two big things.
Yeah, let's go through all of them.
Yeah, we can share the guidance and I can like go through some of the thoughts there. But
yeah, do you still want to get into med spas at the end of this one?
We absolutely can if we get to it. Yeah, you know how we start with like good intentions and then we get pulled into like other directions?
Oh, these are the good intentions? Okay, gotcha. This can be a rough one.
We'll find out.
By the way, congrats on the art piece.
Thank you.
You're going to do a live stream unboxing?
You keep saying that I should do a live stream, so we may land up doing it because, you know
what? But your background, it's not going to fit where you're sitting.
No, it's not going to sit here. It's not going to fit here.
So how are you going to put
my piece from recently?
Are you going to feature it on videos? Like, people want to know now.
I'll put it up. Only because when Dan Safara tells you to do it, you do these things.
If I had it, I mean... I feel like, by the way, that's another attorney issue. Like, it's a tax write-off, maybe, if you use it as your video props.
So you really need to follow this woman, Jasmine DeLucci, who's like a tax lawyer. I don't know her or anything, but I love her, like the stuff she puts out. So just putting something behind you doesn't make it a tax write-off. But yeah, we can talk about that as well.
I'm not talking about that.
I love
tax. I have nothing, stuff. For the record, I have nothing behind me if any regulators listening of a virtual background.
So let's start with just, like I said, I think that this guidance should really be titled Love Letter to Telehealth, because everything in here is all about telehealth.
Telehealth sounds so like 1980s, like sponsored by AT&T, sponsored by Ma Bell.
Probably right.
What is telehealth? You call a patient on the phone?
So telehealth is, and they actually define telehealth according to the FDA. So let's go to the definitions.
Yeah, let's go to that because
is telehealth, it Zoom? Use is of it electronic phone? Medium information and telecommunication technologies to support remote interactions between clinical trial personnel and trial participants.
Okay, so texting is telehealth.
Absolutely. Phone is telehealth. Going to the pharmacy is not telehealth. However, it is decentralized clinical trials.
Going to the pharmacy is not telehealth, but if the pharmacy texts the patient reminders,
yes,
that becomes absolutely telehealth.
What you also have to remember is in those scenarios, because I'm working on a couple of telehealth projects right now, and it's fascinating because what most people think is that, FDA said telehealth, we're now good to go telehealth. There are a bunch of state rules that kick in. For example, you put on, and you're seeing a lot of sites do this because sponsor protocols include this, walking around with like an iWatch, for example. And people are like, you know what? It's part of the study. Good to go. State laws decide whether you can use that or not. There are privacy rules that kick in. There are informed consents specific to telehealth that have to be signed. You can't just go, FDA said, okay. That's just one of the organizations you have to worry about.
Right.
And but most people don't realize that. Most sites have not done what is required. Like, you and I have talked about the corporate practice of medicine.
And the FDA is not even the one that has actual teeth, if you ask someone like Patrick Stone. I mean, the FDA is not even the enforcer necessarily.
DOJ.
There you go.
Yeah. DOJ, OIG, U.S. State Attorney, U.S. Attorney's Office. They're right. All going to come after you.
When they're doing studies with controlled substances as DEA.
Yep, DEA.
You know, and if you mix telehealth with DEA type stuff, I mean, they could look at that stuff too.
Oh, there's tons of it. Do you want me to show you guys? Here, telehealth, prosecution.
I mean, anything is like evidence. Anything's documentation in research and law.
Because you asked for...
$100 million Adderall distribution healthcare fraud scheme. What a time to be alive.
And that's
Los Angeles.
In your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Telemedicine.
Not surprising. That's also where they used to do the patient dumping for hospitals.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do remember that. But this is just one of the examples. So let's start from the beginning, go through some of the topics that you should be thinking about as part of the guidance. And this is why you come on to the podcast, because this guidance dropped yesterday and we're already talking about it.
It's dropped. It's hot. You know, it's not as hot as Craig getting escorted out of D Farm with police, but it's close.
I am not touching that.
I know you're very safe. You know, have you ever been in D Farm? I don't care. No. I've never been.
I'm not rich enough for that kind of stuff. Unless the one's paying for me to go there, I can't afford to.
Me too. But that was in your neck of the woods. You should have gone. Was in Philly.
Oh, I didn't know it was in Philly. I have no idea. If no one invites me, I don't go.
Well, I didn't know until Craig told me about his.
Craig's actually nearby, though. So it's not. So anyway, so let's start with telehealth. Number one, it goes to state laws. You actually need to know that. And state laws goes into things like who can prescribe. So it's not just anyone. There are specific laws. Dispensing. What if you start dispensing from your office, does that render you into a pharmacy at that point? In which case, do you need a pharmacist? And what rules kick in? Requesting records. There are states, for example, New Jersey, that says that before you do anything via telehealth, you first need to have all the records to look at that. Well, are you doing that? Do you have
what do you mean all the records? Wow, New Jersey is crazy. Okay.
New Jersey has requirements around that. Then out-of-state practitioner. So one of the big things of this is, oh, you know what? We're going to have a centralized PI, and we're going to have a bunch of different sites all over. Well, if you're going to do that, does that meet that state's telehealth requirements, the oversight requirements? Because otherwise, you're practicing in a state that you are not qualified to practice in. So that becomes another issue. Professional liability insurance. You may need to get specific telehealth liability insurance, and maybe not, depending on how it plans out. And we actually did an interview yesterday with an insurance broker specifically for clinical trial sites around what kind of insurance you need. I did not get into the telehealth question because I did not realize it was so big right now. But wow. Stay tuned. I'll bring you back on for that. But you can check out my podcast for that. But going back, the professional liability insurance, obviously you need to look at what specific liability insurance you need. Informed consent. Telehealth actually requires its own informed consent in most states. So you then need to get your HIPAA waiver. You need to get your telehealth insurance. And then depending on what kind of study you're doing, for example, if you're doing weight loss stuff, you may need to look at whether you need to get, like Florida has specific rules around weight loss studies. Not weight loss studies, around weight loss programs. Question is, does your study qualify as a program? And I don't know. I haven't looked into that question for anyone yet.
Well, but I would guess as a non-attorney, the answer is your research does not qualify as any type of program except research.
Ooh, except what are you advertising it for? Would you like to lose a bunch of weight?
No.
We're doing a study on that. Oh, I've seen those ads.
We don't advertise. Or you don't. Well, we do. Shout out to Patient Ace. What if the ad says weight loss study in Yuma? Click here.
So let's say it says weight loss study in Yuma. Would people reasonably interpret that to be a program? And we'd have to look at what the definition of program is.
Sure, of course they would. Yeah. They don't know. Most people don't know what research is.
Correct. So if that's true, there's, for example, I think Florida has a requirement that you have to give them a certain bill of rights. They have to know how long the program is, for example, how long the study is. They have to sign off on that.
Really?
There are all these requirements that kick in.
In Florida, of all places, wow.
Marketing. For example, are your claims completely unreasonable? The Senate is going after companies around telecommunications and the types of claims being made, especially in the context of telehealth. So be careful of that.
So this is not just the IRBs policing.
Correct. Correct. So, and this is just some of the
rules. Now, some of these regulators work, like the actual enforcers? You were saying on the state level or whatever. Do they hire people to just scour social media looking for these ads? Or
it can be a variety of things. For example, it's often the FTC that starts this process, and the FTC is looking. You'll have DOJ, OIG, you'll have whistleblowers, you'll have privacy violations. We might discover in the process of investigating a privacy violation that you weren't qualified to do all this other stuff as well. So the moment you open Pandora's box, all kinds of stuff starts spilling out. So
I see.
Be careful. And just to be clear, this is why we do the podcast, because we are literally at paragraph one. We only did one word so far. And you tell me that I take very long with a paragraph.
You're just defining it, by the way.
Exactly. Let's keep going.
Bottom line of all these fraud pods is no one is compliant ever with anything.
Bottom line of all these fraud pods, you can always become compliant, and it's part of a quality assurance process you should be thinking about more.
Right. You can compliance is like yoga. You can never reach like full potential. You just need to keep stretching.
And like quality, you should always be improving with quality as well.
Sure.
Okay. This one everyone knows, but I'm going to remind everyone. FDA's guidance documents do not establish legally enforceable responsibilities. It is only the agency's current thinking on a topic. Far too many people are like citing the FDA. Like the FDA, in most lawsuits, the FDA is in the end simply a party. If you follow them, you're less likely to get dinged. But in the end, can you challenge them? Yeah. Do you want to? Most people don't. Appropriately so. It doesn't make sense to do that. But if you have a really good reason why you don't want to follow them, theoretically you could. Victoria seems to agree with you.
Victoria, welcome to the fraud pod. It's like yoga.
But Alicia seems to think we're doing well.
Shout out to Alicia. She was just on the radio station out there in Missouri.
Really?
Being an ambassador for Clinical Research, yeah.
Look at that.
She's a SOS attendee.
But see,
we know our SOS fam, man. You're not SOS fam yet.
I know. I'm trying to do that right now. That's my next sign up. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go anywhere, but I know I'm coming for SOS.
Okay. I'm going to make a meme about this. Come to SOS and you won't be escorted out by police. I'm going to run with that.
Just say right now.
I won't even do. Yeah. Why would we?
You won't cause the police to escort you out, but others might.
What do you mean? The police are going to escort people out at a
conference? Someone starts making a ruckus, you may not cause
that's different. You know, just like the FDA, we have guidances. And if you start making a guidance, local officials will get involved.
Ashley's already a fan.
Ashley,
I'm excited to see you, Ashley.
Darshan is there. Ashley, look at Craig Lipset's posts. You're going to love it. We got to figure out how to use that as marketing for our conference.
You're going to stick your face on it.
Yeah, it's a free market system. Like, and who do we have promoting? Well, there's no.
Actually, that would be in violation of California law. Did you not know about this?
Well, I'm not there anymore. Thank God.
Yeah, California. Yesterday's news, I think it's AI generated content where you're impersonating someone else is not allowed. So you can't.
Oh, no, we're not impersonating.
If you stick your face on Craig Lipset's body, that's kind of what you're doing.
Well, I have expressed written consent from him that I may do so.
Oh, as long as you have that. As long as you have that.
Or implied consent. How about that? It gets it's great.
Implied if he doesn't know and wouldn't consent.
It starts getting fuzzy. That's where we need you.
Come save me with it. When does black and white help make me fuzzy? Make it fuzzy.
That's right.
Okay. So I love how they actually clarify. What is right in these types of clinical trials? Decentralized trials may be appropriate for investigative products that have well-characterized safety profiles, which means that probably your phase ones, not so great. Phase 2As, probably not so great.
Right.
2Bs onwards, you might start seeing an argument. So that should tell you a little bit.
To be safe, maybe phase 3, but to be really safe,
yeah.
Some people will say never.
Yeah. Some people might say that. Some people might say only in post-approvals.
Right.
Like a phase 4. Some people might say second indication, maybe. So,
and at the end of the day, it's up to like if you're a research site, this is nice to know, but ultimately the sponsor is telling you what to do, more or less.
Yes. And in fact, the sponsor has a bunch of responsibilities in this guidance.
Yeah.
Like
there was one study where it was a foreign sponsor, you can tell, and they had us, you know how like, there's studies with unblinded pharmacist that's not really a pharmacist. It doesn't have to be a pharmacist.
Okay.
So they wanted, this was the first time I've ever been asked, us to make our own prescription pad to show proof that a script was written by the PI. Even though it's going to our own, like, MA who's serving as pharmacist. They just wanted to see a documentation change.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Why?
Practically speaking, because we've never had to do this in any.
But that doesn't mean it doesn't make sense.
Because there's already an IRT. There's already somebody going in there, you know, with the order. It's implied that the PI is already telling the staff, hey, we're following the protocol.
How do you know the PI told the staff that?
Because the IRT, like the PI has to sign off on every visit.
But when do they sign off? When do they sign off?
During the visit, at the end, whenever they
want. That's not true. We both know that's not true.
So you're saying that making that prescription
is... Oh, yeah. That should be something you do up front. You don't... You want... And this is true not... I remember this when we were doing this in pharmacies, right? When I used to work in a hospital, you'd always get the doc call up and go like a verbal order going, oh yeah, just give this thing out.
Right,
and then we'd
write
a prescription going, write an order saying verbal order, blah, blah, blah. Doctor said,
right.
We've all moved away from that. Jayco is not a big fan of that.
Ah, okay.
So verbal orders are not preferred. Jayco pushes back on that.
Even if it's documented.
That's been like 5 years. Was that?
Even if it's documented, the verbal order.
You're the one doing the documenting. So it's really hard for... So you need the countersignature, and that countersignature doesn't come for weeks until after the order. Even the doctor's like constantly in the charts.
I see.
You want contemporaneous writing. It's Alcoa, remember?
Okay.
So
fair enough.
To the point you were making, though. Remember the last podcast we did? You were talking about how one of the meds that you were writing that they were making was complex. This would not be appropriate for complex preparation, administration, or medical assessments. So, again, specific studies would automatically be excluded. And there's another component that I think a lot of sponsors may not consider, especially I think around either temperature label drugs or sterility, stability based drugs. I'll talk
right.
about that.
Right, we got into that last time too.
Yeah. Again. Follow-up assessments can be performed remotely through electronic patient report outcome measures via telehealth or in-home visits or by local HCPs. If you're going to use electronic patient report outcome measures, is your first of all, is that legal in your state? Because it may or may not be. Let's assume it is. How are you getting the data? Is it controlled? And they actually talk a little bit about this. I'm going to jump ahead because I do have a bit of a hard stop, but I want to point this out. This is a 21-page guidance, but they actually talk about having a data management plan. And this is something we've never done as far as I know.
The sponsor should include the following. So the sponsor should have one.
Yeah. But I don't fully understand what the point of it would be. The sponsor should have, this is how data flows. Okay, what is the FDA going to do with that? Like,
well, this is just trickles down more work for sites because... What this does is it makes the sponsor have a form or a series of forms that sites now need to fill out. I mean, we're already doing this anyways.
Yeah, but from a privacy standpoint, what you're really doing, so you already needed to do this from a privacy standpoint. And the reason you needed to do that is to identify where data could sort of get lost and where you'd have privacy leaks. The question is, in this scenario, let's say I can tell you right now where the management plan breaks will be. Every time there's human intervention, you're going to have a problem, except the entire clinical trial system is set up with human intervention, appropriately so. So what is the point of writing out a data management plan when we know it's kind of flawed from a data flow perspective? I think it's. I don't fully know where they're going with this. I think it's probably going to end up being more problematic for sites and sponsors. So be careful about what you do here.
Yeah, another reason to come to Save Our Sites, saveoursites.com.
Did you get saveoursites.com? That's awesome. That's a hard one to get.
Yeah, of course. That wasn't hard at all.
By the way, I haven't used this yet, but I actually got fdalawguy.com.
fdalawguy.com?
Yeah.
Now you got to get fdalawgal.com too, just to make
That's
sure.
That's right, just in case.
It. Yeah.
Okay, so participants home.
Someone buy that one right now and sell it back to Darshan. The dude's caked up.
Participants home, mobile research units, or local healthcare facilities. I don't know how many people are doing mobile research units. Are you aware of any?
I mean, there used to be a company that had a business model around it. I believe they were called Care Access. I remember it was like a pretty big new story in our circle. Research on a bus was their motto.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I guess they passed the FDA audits with no findings somehow. But I don't see how after reading all these guidances every week from you.
So this goes to training or video supervision. So that's going to become another thing.
Training or video supervision.
During a telehealth visit may help with limiting variability.
So training patients.
It could be training other clinical people as well.
Let me tell you everyone something real quick. This part, patient diary sounds like such a good idea. Like, oh, it's more data. Of course we want. Everything's data. Data is the new oil. Let's get everything data. Give them every day a diary. All right. The problem is patients, they get busy. That's a burden. There's a big concept around this now, patient burden. I've seen firsthand on studies I've worked on, studies failing, good drugs failing because of these daily diaries.
Yep.
Because somebody needs to police the patients. And the sites don't think about it. The sites are just looking at every visit, every office visit, right? No one's looking at every day or sometimes multiple times a day the patient's required to enter something in the diary. Patients make typos all the time. I've had patients tell me, yeah, I just click whatever to get through the next screen. The design on this thing's horrible.
Yeah.
So they're just putting random things in there. You as a site are supposed to retrain them. Hey, I know it's annoying.
Right.
But you got to pay attention because this is important stuff. Yep. Maybe you get through to them. Maybe you don't. And then you got to decide whether you drop them from the study or not. This is going to fail. This is one of those things where sponsors say, oh, great idea. Sign me up. We have data as the new oil, to where it's going to mess up your NDA submission.
So number one, data as the new oil is a huge problem because under GDPR, you can't just be collecting data because it's nice to have.
What about all these exploratory endpoints that they do?
Well, that's the question. You can have it for a certain amount of time. If you're not using it, then you may not hold on to it for an indefinite period of time. That's
It's never been easier to use random data.
I don't understand the question.
It's never been easier to use to have applications and use cases for random data.
Yeah, it may not have, but they still don't use it, right? So you might have, people actually did this, right? People just collect data because data was the new oil.
Yeah.
And governments are basically coming out and saying that's not good enough. You can't just collect it because you might want it someday.
Yeah, only the government can do that, guys. Come on.
Yeah, basically, right? So they then come out and say, so the goal for them is obviously limiting variability. Just to be clear, we've now done a 40-minute podcast. We're on page seven. But really page four.
Y'all going to have some reading to do. You guys let me know what you read. I'm not reading this. Let me know if there's anything interesting. This is stuff we've been doing since 2002.
Well, I think your big issues are going to land up being. So I'll sort of give you, because I do have to jump off in about 5-7 minutes or so. What I do want to point out is we talked a little bit about, and this goes to what you're saying, which is I think sites will continue to remain very important. Because number one, you need to still have places people can do the audits. So you can do an audit at 50 different locations. So you still need a centralized place you can do monitoring. You also need to have a clear process where the sponsor can send the drug or the device. Because few different issues that pop into that, right? So one is, how do you make sure that the drug, when it gets shipped and it reaches the patient, the patient's going to get it. How do you handle the privacy element of it? How do you handle the element of the standard of care is being paid for by the government, the appropriate copay is being paid if necessary. If the standard of care is not being paid for by the government, how do you make sure from a privacy standpoint the patient got it? How do you make sure that the drug, when it shipped, was not kept in a hot UPS truck for far too long? And people go, well, that doesn't happen. UPS drivers are literally keeling over from how hot that thing is.
Yeah.
It's happening every single day.
They have those little sticks, those little USB sticks in there.
in every shipment. The temperature controls are our major issue.
Right, but we're trained to when we get a package, put it in. And all patient's not going to do any of that.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you're now going to tie this to a local pharmacy? How is that going to play itself out?
Yeah, well, Walgreens needs extra revenue, I hear. Their stock's doing terrible.
A second.
Not a good stock to own. Not financial advice either. I recommend, while we have a break, AQST. I do own it.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it. Company.
Yeah. Listerine strip epinephrine.
That's interesting. Yep. So sublingual epinephrine, basically.
Yep.
Which is interesting because it gets past, it's a buccally absorbed. It should be pretty immediate.
All studies done, they're gonna be submitting to the FDA before the end of the year, and then they'll probably have a PDUFA date of.
But like, why? Why not be shocked?
People are the compliance.
If you're dying. I get it.
No one wants to carry a briefcase with them. And it's,
epinephrine is a shot, like it's a single like syringe.
There's a case, and it becomes cumbersome to like be compliant. This fits on the back of everyone's phone.
No, I'm not saying. Again, that raises the risk that it'll get misused or it gets abused in some way. And again, you put it on the back of the phone overheats. Does that epinephrine work when you need it to?
Yeah, they did the studies. I'm trying to get the senior director of sales on. Shout out to Sherry Krasinski. She keeps ignoring my messages, but she did say okay once. So there's a chance.
She has to be worried about SEC disclosures and stuff, so she may not be.
Oh, no, we're just talking about her career.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, if she talks to enough people like you, they're going to tell her no. So, Sherry, ignore what Darshan just said. You're good.
Or just hire Darshan to know how to do it right.
Oh, there you go.
They talk about privacy here, and that's great. But if you're talking about privacy, remember that you're not just talking GDPR, you're not just talking CCPA. In this case, you're actually talking about CMEA, which most people don't even realize happens. So CMEA is California, for example. I'm picking on California because it's the most famous one. It's their medical law, medical privacy law, which most people don't even know exists. So keep track of that. We've talked about GDPR, we've talked about CCPA and stuff before. I was looking at a recent lawsuit involving pixels and cookies and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that implicates, by the way? Because it was actual lawsuits against actual large companies. And
health,
you know,
privacy.
You'd think privacy, right?
Yeah.
Wiretapping. So they looked into wiretapping laws and they're suing the companies based on wiretapping laws.
Like Patriot Act type of things?
Sort of. Not quite, but yeah. So the idea is that if you're tracking someone who didn't consent to being tracked in that way.
Yeah.
Is that actually wiretapping?
Well, now every website has accept cookies or reject them. I mean, it's so annoying, man. Every single website.
Well, that's GDPR requires that and CCPA requires that. But even if your consent policy needs to be updated. So those people who are just listening in still, you need to make sure that whenever you design your website, have someone see if it's ADA compliant, Americans with Disabilities Act. Because you're seeing people sue based on non-compliance.
I remember you telling me this.
Yeah, it's still happening. It's a big deal.
Wow. So they are suing research sites.
They're suing pharmacies. They're suing anyone because it's very, very general. So keep track of that. Uh-huh. And make sure your privacy policy, for example, has... I know, Dan, you've dealt with this issue, TCPA compliance. So if you're going to use text messaging for reminders and stuff, you need to be TCR compliant, TCPA compliant. So you need to have the appropriate privacy policy on there saying that we're checking up on all of these things. If you're going to be, for example, tracking people using pixels or using cookies, you need to get their consent to do that. Yeah. So update your privacy policies as well. We can keep going, but how is this looking so far? We are just at page 5 right now.
I mean, I feel like this medical spa is like this mythical unicorn will never like actually catch.
Well, I think that's part of the goal, right? Keep coming back for the... Did you ever watch Jimmy Kimmel when he would talk about we're going to have Matt Damon back at some point and he'd never come on and that was the whole joke?
No, but I can't stand the guy, but it seems like this scenario as well.
Yeah, basically. Okay. So similar. We will get to the medical spa someday. Good morning, Monica.
Yeah. Shout out to Monica. SOS. Monica, go check out Craig Lipset's post. Let me know.
Craig, getting a lot of people checking him out right now.
Dude, you don't piss off Craig, man. And you don't disrespect Craig.
That's right.
Period.
The Craig will come calling. He is the one who knocks. That's Heisenberg.
That's the Breaking Bad way. Yeah, man. He brought me back to 2013 on that one.
That's right.
Well, you got a hard stop. I mean,
I do.
You want to just stop it right now?
Yeah.
Thank you, Baba Yaga.
Feel free to reach out.
Baba Yaga, everybody. We're going to do the unveiling of your, like the unboxing. Have you unboxed your thing?
I have not yet unboxed it, but. Okay,
please do it. I don't care if it's with me.
Okay. I will do the unboxing with you.
Do a video, and we have to like reveal it somehow. It's so cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. I will like, subscribe, comment, share. Go follow Darshan right now. None of you are compliant. Bye-bye.